2025 is here, and the pace of change has never been faster. Are you ready to thrive in a world where AI accelerates everything but can't replace the most essential human skills? That's why we've created a special 11-part series on the Learn It All podcast to help you master the skills needed to future-proof yourself and your career. From self-awareness to listening and developing trust, these are the traits that will make you irreplaceable in an ever-evolving workforce. I'm Damon Lemby, CEO of Learn It and two-time best-selling author, and I'll be your guide throughout the series. Joining me is Dr. Mickey Fitzcollins, Learn-It's top-ranked facilitator and a leadership expert dedicated to helping you grow. This series is brought to you in partnership with our good friends at MuchSkills, a platform that helps organizations map and understand their workforce capabilities. Drawing from insight from their survey of over 28,000 professionals, we'll unpack 11 skills in this weekly series that will prepare you to thrive in an ever-evolving world. If you enjoy this episode, please take a moment to rate and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us share this message far and wide. Let's dive into today's top skill. I hear people all across the board talk about that we live in a post-trust world. There's so much uncertainty. There's so much skepticism out there. And I think this is incredibly important when it comes to the workforce. So I want to start off with asking you, what is your definition of trust, especially around the workforce?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about trust, there's a couple of different ways we can look at it. Trust really comes down to the belief in somebody about how reliable they are, their capabilities or ability, and their integrity, right? I oftentimes think too about like the American Psychological Association definition of trust really is around predictability and dependability, right? Like, how well can I predict how somebody else is going to show up, how they're going to act, how they're going to react, what they might say, and how much can I depend on that person to show up and be there for me? And when we think about this in the workplace, absolutely, this is critical, right? Because whether it's me and a supervisor, me and a supervisee, myself and a client, whatever it is, we need to have a level of trust, not only for us to feel comfortable, but also for us to feel like we can move beyond that kind of base level of kind of protecting oneself to really kind of open ourselves up for better relationships, stronger work together, stronger teams, and just higher performance altogether.
That's great. And with that, let's dive into a story about trust.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's a lot of instances that I've had over the years of good trust experiences and not so good trust. I always like to share the ones where like things maybe didn't go quite so well because I feel like they're a little bit more relatable. This is a story from earlier on in my supervisory career. I worked really closely with a very talented supervisee, and this person was just super driven, super invested in their work, but we had just massively different ways of looking at deadlines. I was very schedule-oriented, would be the way I would describe it, whereas they took a little bit more of a fluid approach, kind of believing a little bit more of like results are what mattered more than timelines and process and all that sort of stuff. And one day there was a project that we were collaborating on for a presentation, and I needed some confirmation of its completion before I was presenting it to a higher up. But when I asked, the response that I got was, yeah, I'm wrapping it up. I'll get it to you soon. My reaction, right, being that deadline focused kind of sort of person, was pretty immediate. I went into fix it mode. I went into take over it mode. You know, I was redoing, I was reshaping, I was rebuilding. And by the time the deadline arrived, the project was done because I had redid it, right? But it was entirely my version, right? Because I just kind of steamrolled right over that person. And the impact of that was absolutely immediate, right? My supervisee was felt totally sidelined, unseen, and frankly undermined, right? And from their perspective, I had swooped in and kind of taken control because they thought that I didn't trust their ability to deliver, right? And, you know, for me, I was unwilling to kind of step outside my comfort zone of like being a schedule-oriented sort of person. And they were absolutely right. Like, I had compromised their autonomy, and it was a huge trust break for us, right? There was a lot of work that I had to do to rebuild that trust. I had to address the issue, kind of head on. And I invited them in for a conversation, completely owned up to my actions, not just what I did, but why I did what I did. And what I did to start rebuilding that trust was kind of leaning into understanding things from their perspective, which is about empathy, which is kind of one of the three pillars we're going to talk about today. This was really about me not looking at them, but working through them and over them. And so I had to do a lot of work, very first and foremost, to rebuild kind of my empathy, my, you know, perspective, my understanding of who they were, right? And it took a lot of time. It took months and months and months for me to restore that trust. It became kind of a joke after time, right? That, oh, you know, don't take this over, Mickey, or anything like that. But I, you know, it's one of those examples that sometimes that if we do something that erodes that trust with somebody else, it can take a long time to repair it or to get it back. And sometimes we can't repair it at all.
No, that is true. So when it comes to trust, Mickey, how do you get people to trust you?
Quick break. If you're serious about mastering the skills for 2025 and beyond, Learned's got something special just for you. Hit the link in the show notes for 45 days of free Learned classes. It's an incredible way to future-proof your growth. And if you're leading a team, up to 20 of your team members can have access to unlimited free classes as well. Because we believe companies grow when their people do. This offer is good through July 1st, 2025. So reach out today. Now back to the episode.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, trust really comes down to kind of three different things. And we talk about this. We have a great workshop called Build Trust with Your Team. And in that, you know, we lean on a lot of our expertise and our experience. And we also take a look at some of the great research that's out there that talks about kind of these pillars of trust. Okay. One of them is empathy, as I just mentioned, right? Kind of the three big pillars here is kind of how do we understand, how do we value other people's perspectives? The second one is competence, right? Because we build trust through looking at the other person and saying, yep, he knows what he's talking about, right? He's good at what he does. He's reliable. He has the capacity to do his job, right? And then the third piece is authenticity. And authenticity is really important because if people never feel like they're really seeing the real you, they don't feel like they can actually kind of relax around you. And so, you know, we talk at length about kind of some of the sub pieces in that workshop, but really the one that's so important in all of this stuff is empathy, because we have to be willing to see the other person and understand their perspective in order to build, I think of it as kind of the bridges of trust, kind of thinking about putting like planks in a bridge over a creek or something like that. Empathy is the very first place that we start.
And at the end of the day, I don't think you can really expect people to trust you if you don't give trust, if you don't trust them first.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there's, I've heard people kind of share this analogy, and I think it's actually a really good one, is that trust is like a bank account, right? You can only do one of two things. You can make withdrawals or you can make deposits, right? And obviously what we want to be doing is making deposits into the trust bank account with other people. But when we do make withdrawals, those tend to be really, really big withdrawals. And so what we want to do, you know, one of the things I talk about in that workshop is, building trust out loud and always working to improve, because there's no real like upper ceiling to, oh, I have all the trust in the world. Damon and I have 1000% trust one another, right? There's no upper ceiling limit as to what that looks like. So we have to do things constantly to be building trust out loud with other people.
Share with us one practical tip that you can do to build trust out loud with people.
Yeah, I think of dependability, kind of under that umbrella of competence. Dependability, I think, is a big one, right? People need to know that you're going to show up, that you're going to deliver, that you're going to follow through, that you're going to be able to do so on time. And if you can't, right, that you're going to clearly communicate and be honestly and open and transparent about that. I think dependability is probably one of the most underrated elements of trust, but it's one of the one like underrated in terms of, you know, people kind of tend to look at the empathy piece first. But, you know, how we deliver and how we follow through with each other, especially in a work environment, I think is absolutely critical. One of the other things, and actually myself and one of our other learning colleagues were just talking about this earlier today, is advocacy. So for any of us that kind of sit in that leader, managerial, supervisory, coach sort of role, one of the things that we can do that demonstrates trust is advocate for other people. Advocate to leadership, advocate in front of other folks. There's also reverse advocating, meaning like I'm trying to get people to not be asking this person to be on their team or be part of this project or anything like that. But advocacy means that you have to know what that other person wants and needs in order for you to put that advocacy out to other people. All of that is built on trust and empathy.
I want to kind of go back to what you said about being dependable. If there's one thing that I think is super important, is not overpromising and underproducing. If you're going to tell somebody you do something, you do it. Show up on time and you deliver on your promises. Now, if you're, and one of the best ways to do that is to make sure before you commit to something is to build in enough buffer. If you think something is going to take you 3 days, tell somebody it's going to take you 5 days. So you have that extra time in there. I have a really good friend who always wants to help everybody and take care of everybody, but he overcommits to things really quickly and he's always late. And he doesn't do it on purpose, but I told him, I just said, hey man, if you just took a step back and you thought about it, give yourself some buffer room. I think that that's so important. And Mickey, just to overemphasize how important trust is, can you share just two or three stats that are important when it comes to trust?
Yeah, well, and the thing that's super important to recognize about trust is that it has really kind of a positive waterfall effect in terms of all the things that we see as markers of good, healthy workplaces, right? And there's a fantastic researcher out there by the name of Paul Zak. He actually studies trust on the neurobiological or kind of the hormonal level. In some of his studies, he talks about and what the experience is like when people work and operate in high trust environments. And these stats are pretty impressive, right? He talks about people experiencing like 75% less stress at work, 40% less burnout, 50% higher productivity. And obviously he's got measures that he's looking at all this stuff. But I was, you know, Damon, I was just facilitating this workshop the other day, and the stat that always stands out to me, and it always stands out to learners too, that comes from some of his research, is 13% fewer sick days. And I think about that, and I think that's pretty interesting, because what he goes on to talking about is that people are voluntarily choosing to step away from work because they feel so stressed and so burnt out and all of this. And so the antidote to that, right, or the solution is, what can we do to drive ourselves to be in a high trust environment that people are leaning into work, that they want to be at work? It's not that people are getting less ill, right? Like, you know, that there's less germs or something like that. But it's that, it's offsetting that I just can't do it today thing that sometimes, you know, I just posted about this the other day on LinkedIn about, you know, manic Mondays and the scary Sundays and all that sort of stuff, that sometimes people just don't want to go to work. But in his research, he talks about all these just huge statistics. If we work, if we intentionally create these high trust environments, which is a two-way street, it's not just about individual contributors trusting their managers, trusting the executive leadership. It goes both ways. Absolutely.
Is there a tip that you could share from the Learn It workshop that could help reduce burnout through this trust that we're talking about?
Yeah, I think one of them, I love what you said before about kind of the follow-through piece. And I actually would build on that. Recently was facilitating one of our time management, Get Strategic With Your Time, time management workshops. And in those workshops, we talk about saying no professionally, and how we tie that to time management is our ability to truly understand what's on our calendar or what's on our plate, so to speak, right? Your example of your friend that kind of always says yes and overcommits, I think we see that in the workplace a lot, and especially our earlier stage employees tend to be like, oh, I should say yes all the time because I'm trying to build my reputation and whatnot. But I think one of the best things that we can do is we can learn to say no professionally in an ethical sort of, here's the things that I have going on. Here's what my priorities are. I'm willing to reprioritize or deprioritize if I can work with my supervisor or whomever to do so, so that I can say yes to this thing, so that I can deliver on time, that I can deliver at the quality that we want to deliver, you know, at the cost we want to deliver, whatever it is. That I feel like is a skill that is really underdeveloped. And that's not just for early stage career folks. I think I see that all across the spectrum of, you know, 20-year-olds and 60-year-olds are still struggling with this. But I would encourage our listeners, if you can work on building that skill to say no professionally, and for those of us that have influence in organizations, create cultures where it is acceptable to say no, and here's why. That's an incredible skill, because what that does is that reinforces not only competence, not only authenticity, but empathy too. Because it's saying, well, here's what I can do and here's what I can't do. Here's what I'm trying to do, right? And like that connection with other human beings, this is the stuff that makes those deposits in the trust bank.
And a lot of people that are listening to this episode today, Mickey, are high performers, right? That they're always looking to get better. So they're taking their time. They're either on a drive right now or on walking the dog, or they're doing something and they're listening to this. They want to get better. And I bring this up because high performers are the ones who a lot of times need to know how to say no professionally, because this is a whole other, you know, topic when it comes to delegation. But a lot of times the high performers constantly get extra work thrown on their plate because they know it'll get done. So do you have a specific tip for a high performer who gets delegated to all the time and how they can give pushback to their boss so that, or if maybe not even pushback, but like, okay, maybe take this off my plate if you really want me to do this, because you got to be able to say no. Otherwise, you know, you get flooded with extra work. And then when you do that, you get burned out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bad for the individual, even though there might be an initial bump of like, ooh, they trust me. Ooh, they like me. Ooh, they want me to do this extra thing. There's that initial bump. But generally speaking, what that's doing is that's actually taking a withdrawal out of that trust bank, right? Because yeah, you're contributing to burnout. You're contributing to the person possibly, you know, burning some of their boundaries, whatever that might be. So when I talk about this kind of saying no professionally, you know, if we get into that a little bit more, what I always encourage people to do is when somebody asks you to do something, and if it's something of consequence, right, is to never say yes or no right away, okay? You would say, you know, that sounds really interesting. Let me get back to you in an hour, later today, by the end of the day, something like that. Because what we're doing in that time is now, if we're really well organized, we're a good time manager, we're taking a look at our priorities, we're taking a look at our calendar, and we're seeing, where do I actually have space to do this, right? Because like there is no 25th, 26th, 27th hour of the day, right? So we have to figure out, based on this other stuff that I've going on, can I say yes or do I have to say no? If you say yes, great, there you go. If you have to say no, the thing that I always tell people to do is to say no and offer something with empathy, right? Like you're going to say no in an empathetic sort of way. I really wish that I could help you, but right now I'm committed to this project, and this project, which all have, you know, a lot of work that needs to be done by the end of the week, end of the quarter, whatever it is. Give that person some level of alternative, I think is kind of the next step to that. Meaning, I can't do this whole thing, but I'd be happy to review a draft, put some comments in there, something like that. I can't commit to 100% being your person, but I could 20% help with this or something like that. Oftentimes I found, and even in Learn It, I find like people are willing, they're like, oh, cool, 20%. Yeah, that works for me. I can, you know, kind of patchwork this together. If you can only do that piece, that's totally cool, right? Because what you're doing is you're offering kind of an empathetic understanding and an alternative there. And those sort of things, I think for the most part, I would say probably 95% of the time, you're still saying no, but the other person, it doesn't feel like that slap in the face no, right? Because you're trying to help that other person understand what you have going on, right? You're extending that empathy towards them. You know, there, of course, the other piece to this is going back to a supervisor and saying, I have too much on my plate right now. And I have so many priorities, I have no priorities. And so can we work together to figure out how we deprioritize some of this stuff to reprioritize some of this other stuff? So I hope that's a helpful tip there.
It's a very helpful tip. And I'd like to say in the reverse, if you're an individual contributor or maybe even a manager and you want to take on more and maybe set yourself up for promotion, I highly recommend that you go back and you find the Ethan Evans episode on the Learn It All podcast, and where he talks about his magic loop, which is a way to help out your boss or your leader to evolve and grow in your career. And leaders out there, you know, what Mickey was just talking about, really have the awareness to make sure that you're not dumping too much on your high performers plates. I think that's really, really important. So be aware of that. Now, Mickey, you know, before we wrap up here, let's talk a little bit about how high performance or high trust organizations outperform their competitors who don't have high performance or high trust.
Yeah. There's actually some really interesting research in it. And every once in a while, I'll find a different study or a different article that comes around on this about essentially that there's a competitive advantage to trust, which is kind of interesting, right? And so, you know, when we think about this, when we have high trust across the layers or the depth of an organization, when people aren't feeling fearful of supervisors, of skip level supervisors, executive leadership, all this sort of stuff, right? You know, that there's that two-way street of trust. There's not this gatekeeping of thou shalt not talk to vice president so-and-so, that sort of stuff that builds high levels of trust. Having those types of relationships through and through an organization that, you know, breeds transparency, it demonstrates transparency, this sort of stuff, right? You know, some of the very best decisions, critical decisions, there's some great stories out there about people who are on the front lines, entry-level sort of roles, that have come up with solutions, products, services that if they didn't have the trust and the capacity to walk up to Vice President so-and-so or the CEO and say, hey, I think I might have a solution to this, right? Those companies wouldn't have been able to do what they needed to do, right? And so I think there's a huge competitive advantage there too. One of the other things that I think about too is that I've seen some research before too that customers can pick up on high trust organizations, right? And when we think about, you know, there's some places that, you know, corporate places that I have shopped at or that I've engaged at and everything. And you could just tell the people who work here like working here. They like the organization. They speak highly of it. They wear the gear. They're excited. They're happy to be at work. That makes customers feel more engaged with the company. Obviously, I mean, that's the most obvious competitive advantage. Customers feel that brand loyalty comes from high trust organizations. You know, low trust organizations, these are people on the customer end of things where like we buy something maybe one time, maybe second time, but we're not engaged in a year over year relationship. And so I think about trust internally. Of what that looks like through the layers of a organization, that's a huge competitive advantage. Everybody being able to talk and communicate and be open with each other. The other one is how we demonstrate that internal trust with our external customers and how people feel that and kind of make the difference in terms of their engagement with us.
Mickey, you keep in touch with a lot of your students and you're super active on LinkedIn. What are two or three of the top takeaways or behavior changes that your students, your learners report back to you after attending a Learned's Trust class?
Yeah. I just facilitated this workshop yesterday, actually. And it's very timely that you asked that because just this morning, I mean, like a full 24 hours later, I got a couple of messages from folks. And they were talking about some of those statistics that I shared about high trust work environments, and they were talking about them from the other side, right? About here are some indicators that I think that I'm in a low trust sort of environment. And I asked them that exact thing of like, well, like, what are you going to do based on our workshop? Like, what are you going to pick up from that? And they said, well, one of the things that statement of build trust out loud, it's everyone's responsibility, right? Trust is a two-way street. It's not just the leadership's job. It's not just the supervisor's job. It is our job. All of us are individual contributors before we are managers and supervisors and leaders to demonstrate trust and give other opportunities for trust to other people. And so that's one of the big things, this kind of that recognition that trust is earned, trust is given, trust is built over time. One of the other things I actually am glancing over my LinkedIn screens over another screen here that one of the people messaged me about was the impact about talking about authenticity and kind of being the real you with other people. That always seems to, it makes some people uncomfortable of like, oh, I want to have distance and boundaries with my supervisees. But when we talk about this idea of showing up, not just as our titles and not just as our position in an organization, but as whole human beings that have stuff, we have things going on in our life, that tends to endear us to other people. And it also helps to have, you know, people have empathy for your life situation, right? Good things and the bad things, right? Of like what's going on in our personal lives, our families, all that. And so one of the people that I was talking to, she said, I'm really going to try to be a lot more transparent and the whole version of me rather than just supervisor me. So those would be a couple of big takeaways that I'd offer from that workshop.
That's awesome, Mickey. You're awesome as usual. Where can our audience connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can find me in the woods in northern Wisconsin, but you're probably going to have a better chance of finding me on LinkedIn. So if you just search for Mickey and Learn It, you'll find me there. Please, please, please do feel free to connect. Love to give people more information about getting a seat in that Build Trust with Your Team workshop or any of the rest of our workshops, or just answer any questions with anybody. Absolutely.
Well, fantastic. And for our listeners, if you found value in this, which I'm sure you did, please connect with Mickey. And also, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to the Learn It, Build Trust for Your Team class, as well as a link to, I wrote an article called The Trust Tax. You should check that out. It's what I talk about around trust and not becoming a skeptic. I also want to share with you, I've got a book called The Learn It All Leader, where we talk about the trust tax, we talk about being a great leader and what it takes. So you can find The Learn It All Leader, my book, Mindset, Tools, and Traits, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you can purchase books, it should be there. And until next time, everybody, stay curious, keep learning, have a great day. Critical thinking is a tough skill to learn.
To become a better problem solver, you have to think more critically. To make better decisions requires us to be critical thinkers. And this is super important, especially in our work worlds, because we have opposing information and opposing ideas and different concepts coming at us all the time. Critical thinking, to me, is absolutely one of those skills that needs to be way up at the top of skills we're continuously building.